Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, November 21st. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. Now let's get started with some local headlines from Fort Dodge. Our first headline reads, Fun, Fine Art. Poorly drawn masterpieces help support Fort Dodge Fine Arts. What's a more perfect holiday gift than a personalized, one-of-a-kind piece of art? How about a piece that supports the Fort Dodge Fine Arts Association? The Arts Association is in the midst of its annual winter fundraiser for its programming and operating expenses. For a donation of $25, a board member of the Arts Association will take a portrait submitted by the donor and redraw it using various mediums. The donor will receive a digital download of the drawing, or for another $25 donation, will receive the original artwork. Sounds easy enough, but there's a catch. You might get one of our super talented artists, but honestly, you'll probably get someone with the talent of a second grader, said Executive Director Shelley Bortoff. The luck of the draw is half the fun. The FDFAA's Poorly Drawn Portraits winter fundraiser is running now through December 8th. The fundraiser returns after a successful first run in 2022. We had a blast doing it, Bortoff said. The best part about it was delivering the framed images to people. The reactions are worth every stress I ever have in my job, she said. The portraits, which can be of anything, but the artists specialize in pets, portraits, family photos, team photos, and just about anything else, make great Christmas gifts, Bordoff said. This makes a great gift for coworkers, bosses, family members, white elephant gifts, the neighbor you've been trying to win over, she said. I can't think of anyone that wouldn't love this. One of the most memorable masterpieces from last year, Bortoff said, was a portrait board member Jason Laird drew of a mom cuddled with her little boys. The photo that was submitted was very sweet, but the drawing made them look, quote, like little trolls. This is one of the most entertaining fundraisers we have ever done, she added. Donors can email their reference photos to fdfineArts@gmail.com and will receive a link for the donation. Each $25 donation will receive a digital download of their poorly drawn portrait, and the original artwork will be available upon request for an additional $25. An extra $10 donation will also fast-track the drawing to be complete within 48 hours. Deadline for submissions is December 8th. Our next headline reads, Governor issues clemency for turkeys from Manson. Birds raised by teen get traditional pardon. The dateline is Manson. A pair of former Manson area residents were pardoned by Governor Kim Reynolds Monday. However, they are not crooks. In fact, they are not even people. The recipients of the governor's leniency Monday were a pair of turkeys named Freedom and Flourish, who grew up on the Moline farm near Manson. They were raised by Ava Moline, age 15. The president and governors of many states have been pardoning turkeys just before Thanksgiving for decades. In Iowa, the tradition is that the birds to be pardoned come from the president of the Iowa Turkey Federation. The current president is Brad Moline, who is Ava Moline's father. Brad Moline decided that the turkey should come from his daughter's flock. Ava Moline has been raising her own turkeys for about 6 years. She started with 300 birds. This year, she had her own barn filled with 2,000 birds. She said she was happy that two of her birds would get the ceremonial pardon. I was pretty excited that two of them would get to survive, and I would get to go to Terrace Hill, she said. She said she was going to pick the best-looking Tom and Hen to be pardoned. She recalled that she went out to her barn and found the two who would eventually be named Freedom and Flourish standing near the front of the building. They walked up to me, she said. She said Reynolds picked the names Freedom and Flourish. On Monday morning, the Molines and the two turkeys traveled to Terrace Hill, the governor's mansion in Des Moines. The turkeys were unloaded onto the lawn. "They just roamed around for a while," Ava Moline said. Reynolds, Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig, and representatives of the Iowa Turkey Federation were on hand for the pardoning ceremony. "This wonderful tradition is a time to pause and be thankful for friends, family, and Iowa's farmers," Reynolds said in a written statement. Iowa's turkey producers' dedication and hard work provide millions of families the ability to celebrate Thanksgiving with a healthy serving of Iowa poultry, she added. "Today's ceremony celebrates Iowa turkey producers, especially the Moline family, fifth-generation turkey farmers, with an amazing legacy that will continue for generations to come. Freedom and Flourish will now live on a farm in southwest Iowa. Ava Moline will begin raising a new flock of turkeys next July after receiving newly hatched birds." Our next Fort Dodge headline reads, Boone County Attorney Magistrate Appointed District 2B Judge. A Boone County magistrate and private practice attorney has been appointed by Governor Kim Reynolds to the Judicial District 2B bench to fill a vacancy made by the retirement of District Court Judge James C. Ellefson. On Friday, Reynolds appointed Ashley Sparks of Bondurant to fill Ellefson's role on the bench. Sparks works in private practice as an attorney owner of Sparks Law Firm in Des Moines. She was appointed magistrate in Boone County in August 2021. Sparks was nominated by the 2B Judicial Nominating Commission, along with Assistant Story County Attorney Karen Forbes on November 11th. Judicial Election District 2B includes Boone, Calhoun, Carroll, Greene, Hamilton, Hardin, Humboldt, Marshall, Pocahontas, Sac, Story, Webster, and Wright counties. Our next local news story has a headline that reads, Grace period for Webster City's speed cameras has ended. The dateline is Webster City. The warning period for Webster City's automatic speed enforcement cameras, which were turned on about a month ago, has ended. Now, if you speed excessively in the two locations where the cameras are staged, you will be fined. The warning period ended at 12:01 a.m. Friday. There are two sites being monitored by the new automated speed enforcement program. One is on Iowa Highway 17, south of Webster City, between Claus Drive and Millard's Lane. The second is along US 20, near the Webster City Water Tower. In each of these locations, there are cameras on both sides of the roadway. Owners of a vehicle caught speeding will receive a civil notice of violation in the mail, Webster City Police Chief Shiloh Mork said in a media release. These tickets are not reported to the vehicle's owner's insurance company or reported against their driver's license. Only those vehicles traveling in excess of 11 miles per hour over the speed limit will receive a violation notice. Violation penalties begin at $105, an increase based upon the severity of the offense. Every potential violation captured by the system is reviewed by Webster City Police representative before being processed and mailed. The fine schedule is as follows. 11 and 15 over the posted speed limit will result in $105 charge plus court costs. 16 and 20 over the posted speed limit will result in $120 plus court costs. And 21 or more over the posted speed limit will result in $135 plus court costs and an additional $5 for each mile per hour over. Mork said owners wishing to appeal their violation can do so by requesting an administrative hearing with the city. The Webster City Police Department wants to clarify that while the automated speed enforcement cameras issue citations for violations of 11 miles per hour or over, the speed limits are posted, and law enforcement officers may issue citations for any violations. To avoid all citations, obey the posted speed limits. Census Gatso, a Swedish firm that operates worldwide and with offices in Marion, installed the system. The city's agreement with Census Gatso was made on April 17, 2023. There was no upfront cost to implement the system. Revenue from paid violations will be shared between Census Gatso and the City of Webster City. Mork said, according to the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, more than 12,000 deaths, 29% of all crash fatalities, occurred in speed-related crashes in 2021. High speeds make a crash more likely because drivers have less time to react and because it requires a longer distance to stop or slow down. They also make collisions more deadly because modest increases in speed cause large increases in crash energy. Our next headline reads, Governor honors Webster City's one of 10. Friday is Mia Petersen Day in Iowa. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds has officially declared Friday as Mia Petersen Day in Iowa, marking what would have been Mia's 50th birthday. She died in 2021. Born in Sioux City in 1973, Mia grew up in Webster City, graduated from Webster City High School in 1993, and went on to become what Reynolds called a model of public service. She was recently honored in a new exhibit at the State Historical Museum in Des Moines as one of 10 Iowans of action, whose life of work of advocacy on behalf of others made an important difference in Iowa history. The governor's proclamation cited some of Mia Petersen's many accomplishments, including her appointment to the Iowa Planning Council for Developmental Disabilities in 1996, her distinction as the first person with Down syndrome to sit on the board of the National Down Syndrome Society, and her 1997 plenary address to the National Down Syndrome Congress. Our next headline reads, Fort Dodge man faces charges of sexual abuse. A Fort Dodge man has been charged with numerous sexual misconduct offenses, including four charges of second-degree sexual abuse against a child under the age of 14. According to court documents, the victim told investigators that Jesus Enrique Arredondo, age 19, committed sex acts with the victim on several occasions, dating back to when the victim was just 9 years old. For the alleged offenses, Arredondo has been charged with four counts of second-degree sexual abuse, a Class B felony, as well as four additional related felony charges. The warrant for Arredondo's arrest was issued on November 3rd, and he was taken into custody on Saturday. He had his initial appearance in Webster County Magistrate Court on Monday, where a preliminary hearing was scheduled for November 30th. Arredondo is being held in the Webster County Jail on a $120,000 cash bond. Our next headline reads, Humboldt teacher on leave, pending investigation. No details released by authorities. And the dateline is Humboldt. A Humboldt Community School District teacher is currently on administrative leave, pending an investigation into an undisclosed matter, according to the district superintendent. Responding to requests from the messenger, Humboldt Superintendent Jim Murray said, "We are following district policy and procedures to investigate an issue." Murray did not specify what the issue is. "We can't publicly comment further, as it is a confidential personnel matter," Murray said. "Families can be confident, however, that student safety remains our highest priority." Humboldt County Sheriff's Office Deputy Corey Lampe confirmed that the department has an active investigation related to the issue with the teacher, and that the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation was requested to assist. "We have no timeline for the investigation to be complete," Lampe said. And turning to today's obituaries, we have one obituary to report. It's Mickey Goins, age 97. Graveside funeral service for Mickey will be at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, November 22nd at the Lake City Cemetery. Powers Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And being as there's no state news updates, we'll move to some national news headlines. This one reads, three general election debates are scheduled for 2024. Neither party has committed to attending. The dateline is Washington, D.C. Three debates for next year's presidential general election are set to be held in college towns in Texas, Virginia, and Utah between September 16th and October 9th, though it remains to be seen whether either party's candidate will actually participate. The Nonpartisan Commission on Presidential Debates announced Monday that presidential candidates will first be scheduled to meet September 16th at Texas State University in San Marcos, south of Austin. The vice presidential debate is scheduled 9 days later at Lafayette College in Easton, Pennsylvania. Presidential debates planned for Virginia State University in Petersburg on October 1st and the University of Utah in Salt Lake City on October 9th round out the schedule, less than a month before the general election day on November 5th. The United States general election debates, watched live worldwide, are a model for many other countries. The opportunity to hear and see leading candidates address serious issues in a fair and neutral setting, CPD co-chairs Frank Fahrenkopf and Antonia Hernandez said in a statement. This tradition remains unbroken since 1976. In 2024, students at our four debate sites will help bring another set of historic conversations to audiences here and abroad, and their campuses will anchor four unique chances to listen and learn. The nonprofit CPD was established in 1987 and has sponsored every general election, presidential, and vice presidential debates since. It does not receive federal funding or financial support from any political party or campaign. The announcement comes despite the Republican National Committee mulling rules changes that would force presidential candidates seeking the party's nomination to sign a pledge saying they won't participate in any debates sponsored by the CPD. Such a boycott would shake up the foundations of the way presidential elections have been conducted in the country for decades, though former President Donald Trump's refusal to participate in primary debates while seeking his party's 2024 nomination makes such shifts perhaps easier to imagine. Yet, Trump has made clear he wants to debate Biden if he's the nominee. We have to debate, he told Fox News host Bret Baier in a June interview. He and I have to definitely debate. That's what I love. The two of us have to debate. The RNC threatening not to participate comes after years of tension between the committee and the commission, which has been exacerbated by Trump. As president, he repeatedly accused the commission of unfair treatment and ultimately refused to participate in the second 2020 debate after objecting to it being held virtually due to the corona pandemic. In a letter to the commission last year, RNC Chair Ronna McDaniel voiced frustration with its response to several party complaints, including concerns about its selection of moderators, a desire for debate before early voting starts, and a push for changes to the commission's board. The commission responded to that letter by saying in a statement that it deals directly with candidates who qualify for participation in its debates, rather than the national leadership of each party. The CPD's plans for 2024 will be based on fairness, neutrality, and a firm commitment to help the American public learn about the candidates and the issues, it said at the time. Trump has shown no signs of being afraid to cross the RNC. He has skipped every primary debate and refused to sign a pledge vowing to support the eventual Republican nominee if he loses the GOP primary. The RNC did not respond to a message seeking comment Monday. National Democrats, meanwhile, have expressed frustration with the commission in 2020 over what they called its failing to enforce the rules when it came to Trump, as he and Joe Biden were then competing for the presidency. As Biden now seeks a second term, His re-election campaign has not said whether he would debate Trump. And now turning to some local sports news, we have this headline that reads, Gale Girls Open on Road, and the dateline is Algona. The St. Edmund Girls open their season against Bishop Garrigan, the defending two-time Class 1A state champions, here Tuesday night. Tip is set for 7:30 p.m. The Gales return six players with starting experience, including seniors Michaela Letting, Sylvia Heldorfer, Kaylee Henning, and Maya Neverman. Junior Josie Harvey and sophomore Anna Lewerson were also key members of the rotation a year ago. Juniors Peyton Bradley and Bray Lynn Reese, along with sophomores Maggie Flaherty, Ava Underberg, and Ava Andrew, all saw action in at least 15 games. Lading, Henning, Harvey, Bradley, Flaherty, and Andrew were all part of the St. Edmund softball team that reached the state tournament this past summer, with Lading and Lursing running at state cross country in the fall. The Golden Bears will have a vastly different look after standouts Audie Crooks and Molly Joyce graduated. Crooks is now at Iowa State and Joyce Truman State, leaving the lead to returning starters Abby Capicius and Zoe Montag. Our next local sports headline reads, Tritons are going bowling. This season has provided plenty of big-time tests for the Iowa Central football team, with one more left to be played. The number 11 Tritons will take on 5th-ranked Snow College inside the UNI Dome on Sunday, December 3rd, in the 45th Game 1 Bowl. Kickoff is set for 1 p.m. Last year, Iowa Central, who's 6-4 overall, claimed a fifth consecutive postseason victory under head coach Jesse Montalto by besting Trinity Valley 31-24. The win marked the 9th bowl win in a row for Montalto. Over the past several weeks, the Tritons have been tested, taking on 3 teams currently in the top 10, including number 1 Hutchison and 2nd-ranked Iowa Western. Justin Silverstein has 1,860 yards passing with 17 touchdowns, while Mario Saunders, who recently committed to the University of Illinois, leads the nation with 70 receptions for 926 yards and 12 scores. The Tritons topped Independence in Garden City before falling to Hutchison to begin the season. They rebounded with wins over Coffeyville, Ellsworth, and defending NJCAA Division III champion College of DuPage before 3 consecutive setbacks. In the final week of the regular season, Iowa Central topped Highland 41-13. Snow College, who's 9-2, lone losses have come against the Reavers and Trinity Valley, who is rated 9th. The Badgers featured quarterback Donovan Smith, who has thrown for almost 2,500 yards and 25 touchdowns against just 6 interceptions, that is. Jared Wilson had 596 yards and 9 touchdowns, receiving, with Amir Magruder adding 452 and 5. Spencer Lambert leads the team in rushing with 640 yards, and A.J. Tillman has scored 10 touchdowns. Snow opened the year with a 7-point loss to Trinity Valley, winning 4 in a row before falling to Iowa Western by 7. They topped the likes of number 15 New Mexico Military, 7th-ranked Dodge City, number 12 George Military, 4th-rated Lackawanna, and Garden City during the year. This marks the 3rd meeting between the two, with the Badgers winning the previous games in 2019 with a score of 30-20 and 2021 with a score of 48-18. Iowa Central is 18-9 all-time at bowl games inside the UNI Dome and have won its last 12 overall. And you are listening to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, November 21st, on IRIS, Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's news for Mason City. Our first Mason City headline of the day reads, Reynolds stumps for DeSantis in Osage. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds joined 2024 presidential hopeful Ron DeSantis on a swing through Iowa this weekend as the DeSantis campaign beefs up its operation in Iowa with the addition of more staff and the opening of an office in Des Moines. At the Osage VFW Post 7920, the Never Back Down, a DeSantis super PAC who sponsors his events, bus rolled in Sunday afternoon after several stops in northern Iowa. DeSantis told voters gathered in the Mitchell County Veterans Hall that, as your president, I promise I won't let you down. Touting his record as governor of Florida, an office he assumed in 2019, DeSantis said, I came through with 100% of my promises. There wasn't a single thing that I didn't follow through on, and that's what we need in Washington. Reynolds broke with tradition in her endorsement of DeSantis ahead of the caucuses because she believes he is the only viable candidate who can win in November. Supporters of Trump, who remains the Republican presidential frontrunner in Iowa, according to polling, said Reynolds' decision to endorse did not affect their support of the former president, but some said it affected their view of Reynolds, who is popular among Iowa Republicans. Trump's remarks the same day at a campaign stop in Fort Dodge High School did not include Reynolds, but the former president took aim at DeSantis. He's going down the tubes, Trump said of DeSantis. He's like a wounded bird going to the ground. If you like what we're doing here in Iowa, you're going to love what this guy is going to do for this country, Reynolds told the enthusiastic crowd of Mitchell County Republicans, including Mitch Mann of Osage, who will be attending his first caucus this January, having recently moved from Nebraska. I'm leaning toward DeSantis, but Vivek is kind of a second choice, Mann said. Like DeSantis said, I'm tired of losing, he added. We need to get some conservative values back into government and get the federal government out of our local business. I love Governor Reynolds. She did a great job through the whole corona thing, and she's done a great job of keeping our state up and running. Governor DeSantis has ran very similar to Iowa on school choice and really standing up and backing parents, making sure we have transparency in the classroom, said Reynolds in an interview with the Globe Gazette before she and DeSantis departed for the day's final event in Charles City. Reynolds said she aims to make sure we aren't indoctrinating our children, that we're teaching them math and science and reading and civics. Their parents don't want to co-parent with the government. They want to have the confidence that the school that they choose to educate their child in will meet their child's needs, their expectations, and to give them opportunity to be successful. I'm tired of losing, DeSantis said. Reynolds agreed. They want somebody that can win, said Reynolds, about Iowa caucus goers and their expectations. They understand what's happening to the country. The decline, the inflation, the open border, the crime in our cities. They're really excited that I stepped out and endorsed DeSantis because they appreciate me getting behind a bold, visionary leader that has a record of success, she said. Trump garnered 43% of the support of likely Republican caucus-goers in a recent Des Moines Register, NBC News, Mediacom, Iowa poll. DeSantis registered 16%. Time for second place with former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. The poll included South Carolina U.S. Senator Tim Scott, who has since dropped out of the race. He's the one, only one, that can beat Trump, and he will, said Reynolds of DeSantis. If we elect President Trump, he is a lame duck on the first day of office, where DeSantis can serve 8 years, not just four, and really get this country back on track. Asked if she would still support Trump if current polls prove out and he clinches the Republican nomination, Reynolds said, Listen, I'm a Republican. I'm going to be supporting whoever that nominee is, but I believe that I'm going to be supporting Ron DeSantis in November. I go behind the person that I believe can win. The Iowa caucus is scheduled for January 15th. Our next local headline reads, Community Health Center participates in Giving Tuesday. Seeks donations. Giving Tuesday, November 28th, is a global campaign meant to inspire collective generosity to nonprofits. Community Health Center in Mason City is participating in this year's event. The facility serves North Iowa, regardless of age, sexual orientation, gender, or insurance status. The health center accepts most insurances and have applied a sliding pay scale for those who qualify, according to a press release. Community Health Center offers medical, dental, and behavioral health services for patients of all ages and in multiple languages. It has many bilingual Spanish-speaking staff, as well as social workers who assist patients, as well as a social worker who assists patients in finding community support services, and a financial advocate who helps with eligibility and enrollment assistance, as well as the sliding pay scale. Organizations like the Community Health Center of Fort Dodge, Mason City, Eagle Grove, and Dayton exist to help close the gap in community needs in terms of their medical, dental, and behavioral health needs, the release said. They are most impactful in fulfilling those unmet needs when caring neighbors leverage out efforts through philanthropic giving that helps sustain our core missional work. In addition to comprehensive healthcare services, the center provides annual outreach services such as coat and sock drives, back-to-school block parties, and other collaborative efforts without community partners to better the whole person healthcare needs of local and surrounding communities. For those considering a contribution, it should be noted that a $100 donation will provide 5 medical or behavioral health visits for patients on a sliding pay scale. A $500 donation will provide and can give someone their smile back by covering the costs of dentures for one patient. Contact Outreach Coordinator Bailey McCormick with questions by calling 641-450-0601. And our next headline reads, Harvest Complete for Most of Iowa at Thanksgiving. The dateline is Des Moines. Another dry and warmer than normal week statewide led to 6.8 days suitable for field work during the week ending Sunday, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Agriculture Statistics Service. Field work included harvesting corn, completing fall tillage, applying fall fertilizer, and hauling manure. Reports of tile work being done in the fields were received this week. We approach Thanksgiving with a deep sense of gratitude for the hardworking farm families who produced yet another substantial crop, despite numerous challenges, including a record 176 consecutive weeks of at least D1 drought, said Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig. Weather conditions are expected to be colder and drier as Iowans hit the road to gather and give thanks with friends and family. Topsoil moisture condition rated 22% very short, 47% short, and 31% adequate, and 0% surplus. Subsoil moisture condition rated 32% very short, 43% short, 24% adequate, and 1% surplus. Corn harvested for grain reached 97% statewide, on pace with the last year, but 10 days ahead of the 5-year average. Farmers in South Central Iowa still have over 10% of their corn for grain crop remaining to be harvested. Cattle continue grazing on stock fields. Reports on more calves being weaned were received. A warm and dry weather pattern persisted across Iowa for a second consecutive reporting period, as temperatures were up to 12 degrees above normal, according to Justin Glissand, state climatologist with the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. The statewide average temperature was 45.5 degrees, 8.2 degrees above normal. Preliminary rain gauge data indicates only 5 stations reported more than a trace of rainfall, with 10 days remaining in a particularly dry November. Weekly precipitation totals range from no accumulation at most of Iowa stations to 0.04 inches at Keokuk Municipal Airport in Lee County. The statewide weekly average precipitation was 0 inches, while the normal is 0.43 inches. Little Sioux in Harrison County reported the week's high temperature of 71 degrees on the 15th, 23 degrees above normal. Mapleton in Monona County reported the week's low temperature of 17 degrees on the 18th, 6 degrees below normal. Our next local story has a headline that reads, "Officials expect to serve their biggest Thanksgiving ever." Karen Handelin is expecting the biggest Thanksgiving ever. The executive director of North Iowa Community Kitchen said generous gifts from supporters should make this year's meal special. "We're good nervous," Handelin said. Cargill was able to donate 100 pounds more this year. "We were able to purchase some things through Food Bank of Iowa." Cargill donated a total of 450 pounds of turkey this year, and Handelin said the kitchen may serve up to 700 meals. Most of the volunteers are Cargill workers as well. Cargill has been donating for several years. "It's kind of a two-for-one," Handelin said. "They provide the turkey and labor as well." Last year, about 441 free meals were served for Thanksgiving. Serving this year will be from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Wednesday. Handelin said dine-in meals will be cut off at noon, but carryout will be available until 12:30 p.m. Volunteers will begin preparing the meals around 9 a.m. Wednesday. Gravy, stuffing, corn, mashed potatoes, and a roll will be served with the turkey. There is no delivery, but people can come in and pick up meals for family members or neighbors. Handelin credits the North Iowa community for Community Kitchen's continued success, even with demand higher than ever. In 2022, more than 100 volunteers logged more than 6,000 hours, preparing and serving more than 300,000 pounds of donated food. Anything that doesn't get used is donated to the Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank. The kitchen is averaging more than 10,000 meals served per month at the moment and has served more than 110,000 meals in the last 12 months. Handelin said people are surprised to learn the biggest demographic rise in demand since before COVID-19 has been children. She said in 2019, they served 70 children. This year, that number has jumped to 250. She also pointed out the facility also serves as a senior center that sees many of the same faces each day. She said it promotes socialization, community, and offers support to those who may not have any at home. Molly Raleigh, who serves as Cargill's food safety and quality manager, organized the donation from Cargill's end. She said the donation is something she looks forward to every year. I think just making a difference, Raleigh said. These people get a nice warm meal, and we're able to help. It's kind of a fun day. Becky Higgins, kitchen coordinator, was hard at work with a sharp knife deboning turkeys with other workers and volunteers Monday afternoon. She showed volunteer Ethan Hubbard how it's done. She said that task is always the most tedious when preparing the meal. She said there is one most important job for the workers and volunteers, just making sure it tastes good. You want everything to taste good, Higgins said. There is no means test at the kitchen. Donations can be made at communitykitcheniowa.com. And as there are no local obituaries today, we'll just move on to Dear Abby. Abby responds to three letters this day. Her first headline reads, "Boss has taken advantage of employee's kind offer." They write, "Dear Abby, my boss, who recently separated from her husband and is getting divorced, has moved within walking distance of work. The problem is she can't drive, and her daughter needs to be taken to and from school. I offered to help her out with her daughter, but now she's asking me to take her everywhere she needs to go. I have been accommodating and have done this for a couple of months, but she has never offered me any money toward gas in my car, even though she's always bragging about all the things she has ordered off the internet. I never offered to be her chauffeur. I work third shift, which is hard enough, and have my own child to take care of during the day. How can I tell her it's got to stop without hurting her feelings? I am getting close to losing control and telling her off. Everyone I know is advising me to stop, and she's just using me. Signed, Used in the Midwest. And Abby replies, Dear Used, explain to your boss politely that you were glad to help her out temporarily by making sure her child had transportation to and from school, but you have responsibilities outside of work that preclude your continuing to serve as her chauffeur. Then tell her that if you are going to continue driving her child, you will need to be reimbursed for the fuel you expend doing it, something she seems to have forgotten. Speaking up is not rude or hurtful. It's called being assertive. And Abby's second letter has a headline that reads, Relative's ill-timed generosity irks Grandpa. They write, Dear Abby, should I be upset that my grandchildren have a step-grandfather who has no children of his own and is always giving money and other gifts to my grandchildren? I bought my 18-year-old grandson a used car with the understanding that he would repay me installments when he started working. He did just that, and then he had a fender bender, so I helped him get it partially repaired. I made the same deal with him as before. I paid for the repairs, and he again repaid me in installments. Well, one of the doors has a large dent and won't open. Now he has sweet-talked his step-grandfather into shopping for another car. My grandson doesn't want to fix the door because it's easier to get his step-grandfather to buy him another car. Should I be upset by this? What should I tell his step-grandfather? And it's signed, Frustrated Grandfather. And Abby responds, Dear Grandfather, I can see why you would be concerned. You have been trying to not only help your grandson, but also to teach him responsibility. His well-meaning step-grandfather is interfering with that. By all means, have a discussion with him because step-grandpa is being manipulated. If he really wants to help your grandson, he should consider treating him to driving lessons. And Abby's third letter today has a headline that reads, Woman Seeks Answer to Crude Comments. They write, Dear Abby, isn't it considered bad manners to comment about the length of time someone spends in the restroom? Several times when I've been out with people at a restaurant or bar, someone has commented, That was quick, when I returned to the table. I want to tell them the comment is inappropriate. Any suggestions for an appropriate response that isn't too snarky would be appreciated. And it's signed Private Lady in Georgia. And Abby responds, Dear Private Lady, try this. Smile at the person and say, I didn't know we were clocking my action. It's better than saying, That's because I didn't want to take time to wash my hands. Would you like me to pass the bread? And as there are no local sports updates today, we will turn to anniversaries. The Jansons are marking their 30th anniversary. Mike and Shannon Jansen of Mason City are celebrating their 30th wedding anniversary. They were married at Trinity Lutheran Church in Mason City on November 26, 1993. Now turning to the In Brief section of today's Globe Gazette. This headline reads, Mason City Man Arrested After Firearm Discharge Outside of Bar. A North Iowa man was arrested after police were called to Lorado's in Mason City around 11:57 p.m. November 18th. According to a release from the Mason City Police Department, a report was received about an armed male at the bar and restaurant involved in a disturbance. The release states the suspect fled out the back when officers arrived. An officer followed. The suspect, identified as 23-year-old Terrell Harlan Hopkins of Mason City, and ordered him to take his hands out of his pockets and surrender. Police Chief Jeff Brinkley said Hopkins was carrying an AR rifle, which went off at the feet of Hopkins and the officer, while Hopkins was being taken into custody. No one was injured in the incident. Hopkins has been charged with the following crimes: possession of a firearm by a felon, carrying a dangerous weapon while intoxicated, interference with official acts while armed, public intoxication, reckless use of a firearm, possession of a firearm by a domestic abuse offender. Hopkins faces up to 17 years in jail if convicted on all accounts. Our next headline reads, Clear Lake Man Accused of Stealing Truck at Quickstar. A Clear Lake man was arrested November 18th after allegedly stealing a pickup truck at Quickstar in Clear Lake. According to court records, 43-year-old Nicholas Dustin Horst has been charged with first-degree theft and possession of contraband inside a correctional institution. He is facing up to 15 years in prison if convicted on both counts. The affidavit states Horst was at the Quickstar, located at 1006 North 20th Street, around 6:41 a.m., when he discovered a 2022 Ram 1500 running with the doors unlocked while the owner was inside the store. Officers were flagged down as they searched the area and were told Horst had stolen the truck and taken it to the American Inn Hotel. Officers then allegedly found Horst sitting in the driver's seat of the truck. Horst admitted to taking the truck, but said he didn't know what his plans were. Horst also admitted that he could simply have walked the few blocks from the gas station to the hotel. While being booked into jail, a small amount of methamphetamine was allegedly found on Horst's person. No court dates has been set as of Monday morning. Our next headline reads, Deferred Judgment for Forest City Teen. A Forest City teenager accused of detonating an explosive device in the Forest City High School parking lot was given a deferred sentence November 14th. According to court records, 18-year-old David Michael Rick was convicted of reckless use of fire or explosives, a serious misdemeanor. A felony count of explosive material or destructive devices was dismissed per an October plea agreement. That count carried up to 10 years in prison if convicted. The affidavit states that around 9:30 p.m. September 7th, an officer heard a loud explosion and witnessed multiple cars fleeing the area. After interviewing witnesses, a video was produced and the officer was told the identity of the defendant. The bomb was a pool chemical bomb and was set off with numerous miners in the area. The explosion was powerful enough that the officer could see the shockwave travel toward the video. The plea agreement describes the explosive device being cased with a closed plastic bottle. And this headline reads, Two of three charges against Norris Springs man dismissed. One felony and an aggravated misdemeanor charge have been dismissed, but the Norris Springs man accused of shooting at an occupied vehicle and at a man's feet is still facing up to 5 years in prison on another charge. According to court records, intimidation with a dangerous weapon and first-degree harassment charges filed against 35-year-old Robert Dean Folk in November 2022 have been dismissed. He is still facing a going armed with intent charge. Folk pleaded guilty to that charge in September and will be sentenced December the 11th. Court papers state that around noon on November 22, 2022, Folk was at the residence of Shane McRoberts when he shot at McRoberts. In addition to shooting at the alleged victim's car and feet, Folk allegedly pointed the gun at McRoberts, causing him to fear for his safety. On November 29, 2022, McRoberts reported he was allegedly being harassed by Folk via text messages. He told officials Folk threatened to kill him the day before he filed the report. On October 26, 2023, Folk filed a motion for an arrest of judgment, but he did not appear at the October 30th hearing. The plea agreement calls for a deferred judgment and 5 years of probation regarding the going armed with an intent charge. The court is under no obligation to follow the plea agreement recommendation. Our next headline reads, Sukup Partners Break Ground on New Child Care Facility. A groundbreaking for a new child care facility for Sheffield and surrounding communities took place on Thursday, according to a press release. The newly named Bintown Child Care is expected to open its doors in late summer 2024. The Sheffield Child Care Expansion Consortium is comprised of Sukup Manufacturing Company, the West Fork School District, and the UBTC. That team, along with Clear Lake's Atura Architecture, developed a design for the new building, and Iowa Falls-based King Construction will lead the construction of the new facility. Representing Sukup Manufacturing Company is Samantha Petersburg, Director of Human Resources. Petersburg has been with the company 10 years, brings childcare board member experience, and was instrumental in the launch of the new five-year-old Sukup Healthcare Solutions, the free on-site clinic for employees, the release said. Research has shown Sheffield is facing a severe childcare shortage. That impacts not just the workforce, but the overall growth and sustainability of the town and Franklin County, Petersburg said in a statement. Research shows a significant shortfall of childcare spaces in Franklin County. The county has experienced a 56% increase in the number of children under the age of six. That number is complicated by the 40% decrease in childcare spaces. And here's some data provided by the Iowa Women's Foundation and Iowa CCRNR. A Sukup-initiated survey conducted in 2022 showed 90-plus families seeking Sheffield area childcare. Families drive up to 30 miles for providers. Many families would make the switch if a Sheffield option were available. Community and Internal Communications Coordinator Amy Fleming is excited about the future and encourages the community to get involved. We are actively exploring childcare partnership possibilities. At this time, we are open to partnering with others who may have the desire to expand their services, Fleming said in the release. For those interested in potential employment at Bin Town, want more information on fundraising, or would like to add their name to the Bin Town childcare waitlist, visit sukup.com/Sheffield Childcare. And that concludes today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, November 21st. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening, and make it a great Tuesday.
People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. With half a dozen measles outbreaks currently underway in the U.S., as well as several serious international outbreaks, the news on measles vaccine from Denmark is important. Researchers conducted a nationwide study that included everyone born between 1999 and 2010. With more than 650,000 children in that group, they had more than 5 million person-years of follow-up. The Danish health system keeps excellent records on all of its citizens, including the children. Consequently, the scientists are confident that the 6,517 children diagnosed with autism during the study period are all the children who developed this condition. Children who did not receive the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or MMR, were equally likely as vaccinated children to develop autism. The investigators conclude, the study strongly supports that MMR vaccination does not increase the risk for autism, does not trigger autism in susceptible children, and is not associated with clustering of autism cases after vaccination.
The Food and Drug Administration has just approved a completely new type of antidepressant. The nasal spray, called esketamine, is expected to help people who have not responded to standard antidepressants. It will be marketed under the brand name Spravato. This drug is chemically related to the injectable anesthetic ketamine that's been on the market since 1970 and is available generically. Although esketamine is administered as a nasal spray, people will not be permitted to purchase it for home use. they will need to use Spravato under medical supervision at a clinic or doctor's office. Some experts have challenged the FDA's approval process for esketamine. While two clinical trials demonstrated some benefit, two others did not show that esketamine is better than placebo. Side effects of this novel antidepressant include nausea, dizziness, headache, and a feeling of dissociation.
FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb unexpectedly announced his departure from the agency this week. Experts were puzzled by his announcement since he has received high marks from the administration, industry, and even some consumer groups. Dr. Gottlieb has raised questions about teen vaping and has been an outspoken critic of pharmacy chains that sell tobacco products to minors. Some commentators speculate that these stances might be related to his abrupt departure. His explanation for the sudden departure is that he wants to spend more time with his wife and young children. Dr. Gottlieb is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Another week, another drug recall. Many lots of ARB blood pressure drugs, including losartan, valsartan, and irbesartan, have been recalled over the past 8 months. These medicines were contaminated with potential carcinogens known as NDMA and NDEA. Now, Hetero Labs has recalled 87 lots, and Tarrant Pharmaceuticals Limited is recalling 100 lots of losartan tablets. These pills contain an entirely new contaminant just identified as NMBA. It, too, is a suspected carcinogen. All three of these nitrosamine contaminants are apparently created as a result of the manufacturing process. FDA Commissioner Gottlieb stated, "We're making important strides at understanding how these impurities form, and we're continuing to examine if nitrosamine impurities may also arise during the manufacture of other ARB drug products. The FDA is committed to implementing measures to prevent the formation of these impurities during drug manufacturing processes in the future."
Cocoa flavonoids may have some benefit for people with multiple sclerosis, according to a small study. Previous research showed that dark chocolate rich in cocoa compounds might improve symptoms of chronic fatigue. The investigators recruited 40 people with relapsing remitting MS to drink cocoa every day for 6 weeks. 19 of them got high flavonoid cocoa, while 21 drank low flavonoid cocoa. At the end of the study, those on the high flavonoid cocoa had slightly less fatigue and could walk somewhat farther in 6 minutes than they had at the outset. They also reported less pain. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.